Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, I don't have to tell any farmers out there that working on a farm comes with risk, whether you're in crop production or you have a herd of cattle or cows. Now, those risks have decreased with better education and the development of technology, but accidents can and do still happen. According to the Chagas National Farm Survey released in 2021, over 4,500 accidents took place on Irish farms in the previous year. Nearly half of them, the people involved required hospitalisation. So how can we ensure farmers take all of the precautions necessary to avoid casualties? Well, I'm joined now by William Sayre from County Tyrone and Angus Mannion from County Sligo. You're both very welcome. Thank you for being with us. And I just want to warn our listeners that before we have a chat to William and Angus, you might find some of the details of this conversation distressing. William, I'm going to start with you because you were only 12, weren't you, when your accident happened. Do you mind just talking us through it?
Yeah, it was an Easter Monday, 1990. I was off for 2 weeks' holidays, and my father gave us the task of putting out some slurry on the family farm. And we had been told by my father the risks of the machinery earlier on in the day, and then it came to about 7:45 at night when my mother had called us in for tea after working all day at the slurry. And we sat around and we had a salad together, and my father says, "That'll do you today." But I said, "Dad, one more load will finish the field." So I was going out past the window and it was starting to get wet and cold. And my mother says, "Come back and put on the coat." And I put on a coat, but I didn't bother zipping the coat up. And I walked on out to the tanker, and I had a friend who was helping me. And he was up on the tractor and making sure everything was okay from that point of view. And the load seemed to be taking forever to fill into the tanker. So I thought I would investigate and look around the tanker to see if there was any problems. And at the front of the slurry tank, there's a vacuum pump, and it creates the vacuum to suck the slurry into the tanker. And it wasn't working to what I would like it to work to, so what I thought I would make some alterations to it. And in doing so, the part of the shaft that was about 2 inches that wasn't covered, I came in contact with my coat that wasn't zipped, resulting in taking me in. And resulting in me losing my right arm. And when that happened, I could see Jonathan run away from me. And to be honest with you, I thought it was all over. I thought at this stage I was dying.
But you were fully conscious, weren't you? Because you walked back to the house.
That's correct. I got up onto my feet and I could see my arm lying about 50 yards away from me, a severe blow to the side of my head. And also what actually annoyed me most is I remember my father telling me the words of warning not to go near the PDO shaft, and I disobeyed him. And this was the consequences. And I walked over to the house with no tears, no pain, fully conscious, and unrecognisable with the damage that was done to my body. Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
There's one part of your story that really struck me was that as you were walking back to the house, your mother was standing there looking at you. I mean, what must have been going through her mind? Can you remember that moment?
I do. I remember everything about the whole experience that night. I just have to say it was very heartbreaking for me because my mother was watching her son, her only boy. I had two sisters. I was only a boy. And she was standing with her hand over her mouth with that expression, possibly, "Oh my God, what has happened here?" No kiss, no goodbye. "Well, I'll see you again. I love you lots." Just things like that you didn't have a chance to say. Mm-hmm. And my father, they're trying to drive a car to the hospital and saying, even himself, I'm saying to himself, "Will he see the hospital? Can I save his life?" You know, absolutely devastating.
And your life changed completely, did it, from that moment?
I did. My father had a business, a farm business. He had milking cows. He had a full farmyard just built up for me to step in and for him to step out. I don't know if you've been told in the story, but he has only one leg because he lost his leg in a farming accident. I have only one arm. And, you know, going back to a farm with one arm wasn't for me. So I had to diversify. And it took me down the avenue of now selling farm machinery for the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm. I'll come back to you in a minute, William, but I want to talk to Angus now. And Angus, you had a really serious accident too, back in 2011, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Tell us a bit about what happened.
Well, for me, it was a beef store to a beef cattle farm in County Meath, and I would be big into cattle and animal welfare and stuff like that. In actual fact, I won an award from Bord Bia just weeks or months beforehand. Now, I wouldn't be into machinery at any level, so what we used to do was leave all the contracting to contractors who knew what they were doing and experience in machinery and stuff like that. And the only machine we would have had on the place was a teleporter. So it was a good summer's evening in May, and I decided, look, I'm not going down home like most farmers will do. It's a lovely evening to be out and about doing bits and pieces. So I decided to go up to the outer farm and bring the teleporter with me instead of my Jeep. And that I went off, and the next thing I noticed when I was up in the field, the cattle were, you know, springtime of the year, they were out, they were dancing around, ready around, running around, and I noticed a gap, and that fence was down. So I went as far as that because I said, Jesus, if these cattle get out on the road, you know, it'll be mayhem on the main busy nav on the Slane Road. So I got as far as the gap, I jumped at the teleporter, turned the cattle away and put hands on my hips and said, oh my God, that was close. And with that, the cattle were dancing around the teleporter. Whatever happened anyways, didn't it push it, and it moved. Now, on the front of the teleporter, there is it's a bucket, and it's lucky enough it was tilted down the way. But didn't the teleporter move in behind me? I didn't see it coming, and I got impaled from the waist down into a tree, and both my legs were basically severed.
My God. And there was nobody with you?
No, that was, and it's amazing, you know, for me, I was on a very, very busy road. I would say, oh, look, it could have been an hour and a half before the emergency services got to me. Hundreds, maybe more people would have passed within metres. Nobody heard me. But as you can imagine, the screams and the pains of what I was going through, you know, getting your legs, we'll say, amputated at that stage. My voice, believe it or not, just carried across the field a bit, and it was an elderly woman actually who heard my voice and rang her son, and she said, look, there's somebody in trouble. He told, ah, no, ma'am, he said it might be kids or something like that, a good evening. She said, no, she said, there's something wrong. And the guy came and got a neighbour, and they rang the emergency services then, and actually when the neighbour, one of the neighbours came on the scene, he fainted with the sight he seen. So, yeah, they got to emergency services, and basically the bottom line, what happened then after that was they took it from there. I was drifting in and out of consciousness. I thought my legs were gone at that stage anyways, and I was bled out. But for me, it was really, I don't know who or what was, somebody was praying over me, because I wouldn't have been found till the next morning, be 8 or 9 o'clock the next morning, because all the rest of the staff that was working there would have went home. I decided, look, it was a good evening. I was going to go up and take that machine with me. And yeah, the emergency services, you know, they actually nearly had to bring some, you know, they were brilliant the way they, you know, looked after me and basically kind of saved whatever legs I was left.
It's,
you know,
just, I mean, it's much like what William was telling us about. It's just how easy this thing can happen. That's just cattle nudging against a machine.
Yeah, very, very simple. And it was, you know, as I say, I was handling hundreds, thousands of cattle. It was a big feedlot. And I had everything laid out that I loved with cattle and working with them and the animal welfare. You know, never had an accident with animals or anything like that, loading, unloading, handling them, all that. And I always said I'd leave the machine to the contractors, because up in that area, there's great contractors around us, neighbours and that, let them do all that work to be trained and experienced and knowledge in that area. And we just had a teleporter, and I decided to bring the teleporter, and look what happened.
Yeah.
I paid the price for it.
And just in terms of what happened after that, you still have your legs. The nerves were intact, but you've been through an awful lot since that happened in 2011 in terms of surgeries and so on.
Yeah, I look at the emergency services were brilliant on site, and whatever way they've got me out of the tree, you know, and cut me out of it as well, because it happened so slowly. If it happened so quick, it would have severed all. But when basically, anyways, bottom line, when I got to Drogheda, the doctors, it was a younger doctor, heard about the accident. He came back and he spotted that the legs, you know, it was, he explained to me, like fork lightning, the nerves were still there intact and there was life in them. So with that, they made a decision to take me from Drogheda down to the Beaumont, and under Mr. John Byrne, and he started to work on me. And look, it took 3 years of I think 29 operations. You know, a lot of stuff went on. But yeah, they saved my legs, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So listen, the reason I know you're both talking about this is just to keep it top of mind with people who are listening, how easy these things can happen. And William, when you look back at what happened, do you often think, I'm sure you do, you know, what could have prevented your injuries?
Yeah, Claire, I'll be honest with you. We all want to get done as quickly as possible. But, you know, that's, when I look back now, if I'd listened to my father, this wouldn't have happened. 5 minutes longer would have made all the difference. Possibly we could have left it for the next day. But we're all trying to do this as quickly as possible. So, you know, that's, sometimes we just need to stop for 5 or 10 minutes and just focus what we're doing and see if we're looking after ourselves, most of all, first of all, before we do anything else. Because if we don't look after ourselves, everything else, it'll be irrelevant, if you understand me, and it's the situation.
Yeah, but these little things, like if you hadn't put that coat on or that jacket on...
That's correct, yeah.
That wouldn't have happened. I mean, but
that's correct.
That's not something you're going to do or advise people to do, because the weather conditions meant that you needed that jacket on.
I did, but if I had zipped the coat up, it wouldn't have been loose clothing against the PEO shaft. If that little flower pot that was missing had been on the shaft, it wouldn't have happened as well. So there was things that I could have done to prevent it happening. And that's all I'm asking the farmers, never be listening today. Just look around them and see the risks, try and eliminate them as best they can. We're not going to stop the accidents completely, but what we're going to try and do is reduce them. And that's why I've lost my arm now. I can do nothing about it. But through the loss of my arm, I want to try and put my story out to people that you don't be the next victim or the next casualty or the next fatality, for that matter, who could maybe go through possibly the same and not have the second chance that I was given.
And you told us earlier about your father losing his leg when he was only 2. Your uncle,
yeah.
So your father's brother, he died in a farm accident.
That's correct. He was actually, it was the 12th of January 1960, out in the family farm ploughing a field. And I'd actually had the field finished and was just tidying up round the edges of the field with the little grey Massey Ferguson tractor. And he swung it around and the tractor went over the top of him and killed him tragically at 25 years of age. And I was called after him. And, you know, when I go down even to his grave and I see his name on the tombstone, that could have easily been my name. And it's very moving, and I sometimes struggle with it, to be honest with you.
Listen, it's completely understandable that you would, both of you, you know, and you tell your story so well. I'm in awe of you being able to do that, because it's such a traumatic thing to have to live through. And Angus, your life changed hugely after the accident, and you've told us about all of the surgeries that you went through. How many years did it take you to physically recover, or can you even say today that you physically recovered?
Not really, because I was lucky, very unlucky, you know, as I say, when you have an accident with a farm machine, they're so powerful. I don't have to tell people, and, you know, including the other gentleman there, I mean, there's usually only one winner, and I count myself very lucky that I come out this side of it. Yeah, look, I spent 3 years in hospital between the Beaumont, Navan, Drogheda and Sligo, and I mean the HSE, I mean, where do I start? The great people I met in them along my journey. There was 29 operations. It's gone on, 13 years now. I actually, at the moment, I'm waiting, hopefully, to get to Knightsbridge in Derry, and there's a specialist there who deals with orthopedics and trauma and stuff like that, and please God, when I get to him, hopefully that they will be able to do something else for me, and it'll be the final piece to the jigsaw. Yeah, look, it's been a very, very tough, you know, lot of years. It's part from the physical injuries, the psychological part of it as well too. You know, it's something that you won't just, you know, brush off. Okay, I've come through the physical stuff as good as I can, and I have. And as I say, I've met some great people along the way. And then, you know, there's an organisation out there called Embrace Farm. You've probably heard of them. You know, brilliant bunch of people. And, you know, what they do for the likes of people who've lost members and friends in farm accidents, and for people like myself who survived it. And look, there's another group there as well called Physical Impairment Ireland. You know, Peter Gogarty and Leo Kavanagh. Great people, and the support they have given to the likes of me and others. We have grouped together discussions and meetings and stuff like that. They're a brilliant, brilliant bunch of people. And also you have to remember as well your families, because, you know, as you know, that guy says there as well, too, going to his mother standing at the front door. I was originally from the west of Ireland, Sligo, and went off back to my job, loved it in County Meath, and all of a sudden I come back in a wheelchair from Dublin. I was told, you know, that I possibly would never be able to walk again. I beat that, but it's your family too. You have to be considered in all this as well, because for them, they don't really know how to deal with all this stuff or how to deal with you, because there's a lot of stuff, you know, where do you go from here? Where do I go from here? I really don't know. I keep at it and keep plugging away the whole time. Someday, you know, as I said, that door will open, I'll get there. But yeah, if I get this other operation, if it can be done out of the way, hopefully it'll be the final piece of the jigsaw for me.
Mm-hmm. Even emerging from hospital after 3 years, what was that like, Angus?
I'd say I was getting institutionalised at one stage, because what they'd done then was, my home place was so close to the hospital there in Sligo, what they'd done was to take me in and take me out for recovery periods at home and stuff like that. Yeah, it was very, very tough. But as I said again, there was a few times you feel like giving up. But I came through all the operations. Some of them failed, some of them didn't. But like I have to say, there was a guy called Andrew Macy. He was an orthopaedic guy in Sligo. And, you know, he stayed with me and retired since. The work he's done, the staff in Sligo General Hospital, everybody, you know, I've met some incredible people along my journey. And it's a great story, actually, you know, and it's a great story to date so far for me as well, too, and for everybody that was around me. But, yeah, as I say, you know, hopefully if I get through this other operation, it'll make my quality of life much better.
And you don't know when that's likely to happen, the operation in Derry?
Well, I've received notification from them last week that hopefully they'll be in touch with me in the next, 3 to 4 weeks. So fingers crossed, I'm waiting for that to happen. Mm.
How do you face that?
At this stage, I'm looking forward to it, because I'll have a consultation with them first. We'll see what they can do. You know, hopefully with all technology, medical and whatever nowadays, it's amazing what people can do and how people, you know, the sort of stuff that has been since I had my accident. And, you know, as I say again, God, we've tried a lot of things. A lot of things have worked for me. Some have failed. I was very lucky again. I didn't go down the route, you know, after depressions and stuff like that. Yeah, there is good days and bad days. I struggle, always will, when I see machinery or teleporters or stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I used to tell my story to students, to the student doctors and stuff like that. But I've stopped all that now at times, because, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in my story that, the horror stuff you really want to forget about and move on with.
Yeah.
So again, my own GP here in Sligo, Dr. Casey, was brilliant. He always watched me, and he feared the psychological part could set in with me. And, you know, they got me to group meetings and discussions and stuff like that. And then Embrace Farm came along, and these guys in Pyramid Ireland, you know, all that sort of stuff, that really got my head focused and I concentrated on other stuff. So at times I did feel I was going that the wrong route, but no, I didn't. I avoided it.
Well, look, I really appreciate you telling the story, because obviously, and I said this earlier on, every time you retell something like this, it's like going back to the trauma. But I know for yourself and William, there is a very definite reason that you want to do this. And William, you know, we hear tragic stories like this. We know safety procedures have improved on farms in the last decade or so, but the pressures are still there for farmers. And a lot of the work is done either alone or in small teams, battling against the weather and against deadlines.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I would like to try and emphasise, even from a government point of view, that it's a partnership. Let's come alongside the farmers. The job has become so much pressurised now, they can't get the help. The son's no longer there, for he's gone and got a job. The wife's not there because she's got a job as well, because she has to work. It's just become a very lonely environment. And I see it in 30 years going round farms, the pressure that they're under. And it's just nice to come alongside even and try and be that listening ear to them. And I'm trying to encourage them and even trying to give them advice of what not to do sometimes, maybe when they would be taking risks.
I'm so grateful to you both, and I think you'll have touched a lot of people and made people think this morning. William Sayre from County Tyrone, Angus Mannion from County Sligo, take care and thank you so much for being with us this morning. We'll take a break.
Thank you very much.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.